Kia ora, everyone. Welcome to Politics in Full Sentences, your thoughtful take on the week's political happenings with a strong lash of free markets and free minds. I'm your host, Ron Premathilaka, and joining with me today is David, after missing an action for a week.
Welcome. You guys did great without me.
Welcome back. And today we have our first guest joining us via Skype, Mike Loader.
Great to be here. Hello.
Thanks, Mike. Just a bit of an intro about Mike. Mike has been researching international gun control measures for, dare I say, over 25 years, Mike. Am I correct in saying that?
I'm afraid so, yes.
Yep, and well-known for campaigning for harsher penalties for serious firearms crime. Welcome both, and thank you for being on the show.
Can we just also introduce Mike as a comedian? Because I've encountered Mike in the most serious kind of topics. He's actually really funny and is actually a comedian as well. I just think we should get that in.
That's the day job. like Batman, my pursuit of justice is just a
Fair enough.
Phantom Mike, you've just raised the value of the show by like 10 times by just being here, so thank you.
David's sitting right there. Come on, you really want to say that?
Yeah, I know, with hosts like this. Huh?
So, I don't know if I should call this the gun buyback or I guess the confiscation with
shooters are quite sensitive about this. We prefer the forced confiscation. Basically, it's not a buyback. The government, we didn't buy them from the government. They didn't give them to us. So but it's a forcible confiscation with compensation.
Yeah, well, you know, George Orwell did say a lot about abusing the language and then abusing power afterwards, and it's true. I mean, you can't buy back something you didn't have.
That's right.
Absolutely true.
Mike, what are your thoughts on this whole process? I'd love to know. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I know, I've heard a lot of comments being thrown around. Tell us how you really feel.
I think it's great. It's going really well.
We did mention he's a comedian.
No, it's honestly, first of all, I have to address the media coverage of the buyback. It was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, it really was, you know, Stalin called, they wanted his journalists back. It was like, you know, record harvest, all workers, you know, are joyous. Apparently every shooter was happy, and they were delighted by the process and got millions of dollars for their guns, and wasn't it wonderful, and everyone's in lockstep. People were complaining on the police page, just saying, now, this is the worst propaganda, asking the police questions. The police were linking, instead of answering questions like how many guns were handed in, they were linking to media coverage. It was absolutely extraordinary. In other words, here are our pet shills. They'll be answering for us. It was quite extraordinary. And just on a side note, go off on a tangent, it's an interesting question whether police are able to delete comments, because people were saying they're leaving comments and questions. Police are deleting them, so it looks like the process is going well. Now, I know Trump just got in trouble for this because he had a government account, and I think a high court there, the Supreme Court, found that he wasn't able to ban people or white comments because that was free speech. It was, you know, public forum on a public site. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see if there's any kind of similar laws here, because police have been launching not only the buyback campaign but also a full-on propaganda campaign, which is prohibiting a lot of people asking questions, which I believe interferes with democracy. But to answer your question on a grand scale, we believe that the gun buyback was just an outrageous virtue signal. There were changes that needed to be made by the gun laws that were being talked about. There was tightening up to be done there, certainly with vetting. That's the other thing about this is, I don't know if you know, but police don't vet. They don't data match with Australia when it comes to vetting. So for people who don't know how you get a gun license, very quickly, you apply, they do a background check of you, they interview your love, they interview your friends and family, they check your security. It's quite an involved process, but police refuse to data match with Australia. Now, there was a horror case where one guy had 53 previous convictions in Australia, serious gang member, like a shot caller. He came here, he was a clean skin, they gave him a gun license, he went on to provide $50,000 worth of guns to a gang. Wow. Now, I started asking questions about this. It turns out police have armed thousands of Australian criminals, thousands. They know that they've committed dozens of offences, and two of them have gone on to murder with guns police gave them. Now, I've been campaigning this for ages, you know, trying to get them to change this policy. They say they're, quote, developing policy. This is years after these horrors. I've written to police ministers, prime ministers. No one will take any action on this. And the shocking thing is, the Australian killer, it looks like he was reported to the police for threats over there. So if the correct vetting had been in place, he might not have got his license at all.
So many questions, yeah. So first of all, yeah, if you're an Australian and you have some pretty out there views and you move to New Zealand, how do you get a license? Because you just said that they have to interview your love, your partner, a significant person in your life. But if you're an Australian in Dunedin, you might not have that. You might not have many close associates. So how the hell do you get any kind of firearm license?
You don't. That's the whole thing. If you come here and you can't show close affiliations with people who know you and can say that you're a stable character, you can't get a gun license, which raises the question, how did he get his?
Right.
And this is the question we've been asking from the start. It would seem, I've got to be careful here, but it would seem that police dropped the ball in a huge way.
Right, yeah, because, and interestingly, that's not part of the Royal Commission. Now, just to go back to something else you said, I mean, there's so many questions here. You said there are people who the police in New Zealand have armed. What did you mean by that? That sounds...
What I mean by that, well, first of all, I mean, during the last Arms Amendment Committee, police admitted there was 29 known gang members with gun licences.
Oh, right, insane. Right. So
everyone just fell off their chairs and went, I'm sorry, go back again? Now, yeah. If I have, because I have a firearm licence, people come to the attention of the police, which means if I'm having a bad time of it and my friend reports me and says, Mike's having a bad time, police can come and take my guns either permanently or temporarily and suspend my license and make sure I'm okay, not a threat to myself or anyone else. Also, if I develop an affiliation with a gang member, like a flatmate comes in, like if I have a boarder who's a gang member, I'm no longer a fit and proper person to have firearms.
So that's just extraordinary. 29. So the police themselves are saying that 29 people who are gang members.
That was back in the day, and they've. I had to pull teeth to chase that up. They've resolved some of it, but some of them still have guns. But the big one is Australian criminals are not vetted.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, I have to stress those numbers I've got. They're only people we've been notified about who were deported from Australia.
You know about.
So if criminals facing some heat, he comes back here, he won't appear in those numbers. So it could be thousands more.
All right. So there's a couple of really obvious things that could be done. One is, if you're a gang member, you can't have a gun because you're not a fit and proper person, obviously.
In theory, you can't anyway.
Yeah, but those accepting they do. Number two, data matching with Australia, because it's effectively one labour market. I mean, in many ways, New Zealand and Australia are one country for a lot of purposes.
Customs can do this, and we strike this again and again and again. This is why we want management of the Arms Act taken from police, because they have no business doing it. It should be given to an LTSA type agency with oversight like the Children's Commission. It's a very simple job. Police are supposed to police. They have two jobs. They enforce the Police Act and they manage the Arms Act, and they have no business doing the second one.
They simply
mismanage stuff, but police don't do what every government department can. Why can't they data match when customs can?
Having a specialised arms registration bureau, not the police, is in ACT's recently released draft firearms policy.
Funnily, You're jumping ahead. We were
You know how excited I get about new policies.
Look, you know what? I think it's great. And one thing that I do want to talk about is I know there's a lot of things. There's a lot of virtue signaling, a lot of a big show that's being put on. I mean, for me, as a layman that's got absolutely no interest in guns, what I do want to know is, are we making it safer? Are we driving more guns underground?
Do you have an interest in tax, first of all? But before we address this, again, there's a third rail, and I've discussed this before. You've got to understand, Labor and the Greens, they hate guns. They want all guns gone. Many of their supporters are urban. They don't understand firearms, as much as rural people do. So they believe there are two options here. You pass new gun laws, they might make it safer, and if they don't, shooters get screwed over, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if you're being honest, that's their agenda. But they're missing what you just raised is the third point. You can make things worse. This is not a zero-sum game. You can make things worse. Yeah. And if you alienate shooters, because you've got to remember, there's 250,000 licensed firearm owners. We pass intelligence to police all the time. Dodgy guy here, dodgy guy there. This guy's, you know, asked for a gun. This guy's that. We pass so much intelligence to them, it's ridiculous. So they've just alienated their largest intelligence gathering.
I've heard David say this many a times. You've just made enemies out of basically an ally.
The most law-abiding group in the people. I've never seen shooters so ropeable. We just feel so betrayed. Yep. And also, it does drive firearms straight underground to criminals. We see it again and again and again. Shocking levels of either non-compliance or partial compliance. Mm-hmm. And this is what you have to understand, is talking about a bigger picture here, just as free-thinking people. If I say seatbelt law, you automatically know what it is. You go, well, it's my body. I should be able to do what I want. But you go, okay, we've got a socialized medicine system. It costs more if I have an accident, blah, blah, blah. It feels reasonable to you, and so you do it. You choose to obey the law because, in essence, it's your law. If you tell someone that, yes, you can have a gun that goes bang, bang, but not bang, 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 people go, that's stupid, because it is stupid, and they decide which laws they're going to obey and which laws they're not, and that's a really, really dangerous thing. So they will keep some firearms registered, and the other ones they'll just tuck in the back shed on the farm, and that means you've now lost control of those firearms. Yep. So they're not evil people, but they've decided, no, we have a lot of fun with these, and my kids can have a lot of fun with them as well. Screw the government, and or maybe the government will change in the future, and we'll get our rights back. So, and you've just got partial compliance, and those firearms now, criminals might have access to them.
David, now your turn. What is ACT going to do? What is the gun policy? I mean, effectively, how are you going to make it safer, and how are you still going to protect the rights of gun owners like Mike?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, there's a question of the process here. So, you know, just going off what Mike's just said, you know, we mostly rely on voluntary compliance with the law in New Zealand. Mm. I mean, most of the time, most people follow the law, not because there's a policeman on every corner making them, but because actually we all generally believe it's better if everyone follows the law, so we just do it. And there's a lot of reasons why we do that. One of them is that we have a process and a procedure in New Zealand that's far from perfect, but basically everyone gets to vote for someone to go to Parliament for them. Mm. And if the Parliament makes a law, then everyone has an opportunity to make a submission and be consulted and be heard about it. Mm. And these are the kinds of things that build legitimacy. When we enforce the law, we do it in an open court. Everyone gets an opportunity to be on a jury. So there's a sense that New Zealanders own the law and that it's something that we can all play a part in. If you're really crazy, you can actually nominate yourself and stand for Parliament yourself, which I'm not sure if I recommend, but it's one option that all New Zealand citizens have. Now, if you do what the government did and you say, we are going to pass a law in 10 days just to make a show of it, and we don't care what anyone submits, we're just going to roll over the top of all that and say, bugger you all, then you erode the faith and respect for the law. And particularly when the law is not very well thought out and not very sensible, you do real damage. And I've said a lot of times that we need the law-abiding firearms community as allies in gun control. That's exactly what Mike's just said.
That's right.
So all of that is really damaging. For one thing, we've done a huge amount of damage, and got to say, you know, every day I'm more and more pleased that I stood up and voted against the legislation.
Can I interrupt just for one moment? Because, yeah. I mean, there's two things that need to be raised very quickly here. One is the extraordinary capitulation of so-called opposition. That was just extraordinary. I won't even touch on that. But the media capitulation here I thought was quite extraordinary. Because I remember you made the headlines for saying that you wanted to see the legislation before committing to it.
Yeah, that was
one of my most extraordinary things I'd ever seen. One of my more radical positions. Since when is it a radical position to actually want to see law before committing utterly to it? That's one of the most extraordinary things I've ever read.
I just thought I'd give it a go, you know. I know. So, but you know, it was pretty scary thing to do at the time, and you know, got caught up talking to the press and wasn't there at the right time, and everyone went on about that. But every day I'm more pleased that I did it because it's being vindicated, frankly.
Yeah. But I've never found you to be pro-gun. Let's be absolutely clear. I've had the pleasure of meeting with you one time earlier on when I was trying to lean on you to get harsher penalties. But I've never found you to be pro-gun. I've just found you to be pro-democracy, basically. I don't think you've actually made a pro-statement other than you'd like democracy to take place and you want shooters to have a hearing. So, I mean, again, these are not extreme positions you're offering.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, you're more likely to find me having a latte in Parnell than in a firing range. I mean, that's just who I am. But, you know, a couple of things about ACT is that we believe in due process, and we believe in protecting the rights of the individual and not ganging up on people like, you know, some sort of schoolyard bully situation, which is basically what happened through that legislation.
David, I want to go back. So with the new legislation that ACT is introducing, what are the key points that would be, that's noteworthy?
Yeah, so again, we thought we'd actually, so we've put out a draft legislation. We got a bunch of people from a firearm community said, well, you know, what would it look like? We've circulated it. It's on our website. Lots of people have looked at it, Colfo and all the rest. So basically, first of all, you've got all these semi-automatic firearms out there.
Yeah.
They need a place to come home and be legitimately owned without the government spending what may turn out to be $1 billion taking them off the most law-abiding people.
Yeah.
So we've said, look, reinstate the E category. Mm. You know, that's the most stringent category. I mean, your firearm's got to be registered. You've got to go through all sorts of exams. You've got to have really safe, secure storage for your firearm. You know, that's the most stringent kind of regulation that there is.
Yeah. Well, I want to get back to what Mike said about data matching, because, I mean, Mike, how long ago were you raising this issue?
Years.
Because that's a very important
issue. Let's be crystal clear as well. I raised the issue. There was the horror case of that Australian with the 53 convictions putting $50,000 worth of guns in gang hands. It was so bad. He was criminally modifying them, like sawing them off, putting silencers on, this sort of stuff. Police started recognizing them like a brand. Oh, that's one of Dave's ones, you know. Then they found the guy who was doing it. So, again, this is a horror case. So I'm starting the clock there. And years and years after that horror case where, you know, it just rocks you and go, man, we have to do something here. Nothing had been done. And I wrote to Mike McElraith and head of firearms, and I said, has this been fixed? And he said, I can assure you it has been. I said, what do you do? He didn't answer. I had to go all the way to the ombudsman to get him to admit that no, they hadn't done anything. They're, quote, formulating policy, end quote. So no, as far as I know, nothing's been done to this moment.
Mike, was that back in 2014? Because I remember reading that. You don't, just give me a rough idea, because I think that's really
important. About there, I think. Yeah, that's probably right. Yeah.
I mean,
and again, but this is the other thing, penalties. This monster did the damage this guy did to put these terror tools in the community, not in the hands of gangs, target gangs for sales, you know, to profit from it. And then he got, he was in the paper, he made the most fuss because on his daughter's birthday, he sold her drugs. It's pretty cheap. It looks like the old, what's that old joke about on his deathbed, my father, this watch, he sold me this watch. Yeah. So anyway, it was absolutely insane. He got a token penalty. And I think we were speaking about this before. I mean, the penalties is the huge issue. 99% of firearm crime is perpetrated by people who don't have a gun license. That's police figures, 99%, literally.
Yeah.
So we know that.
At the moment, we're just punishing the law-abiding citizens.
We've talked about what doesn't work. Let's talk about what we need to do.
Yeah.
So again, we know that literally 99% of the problem is not licensed firearm owners. And yet we'll have entire debates about gun crime without mentioning criminals once. That's insane. Mm. So what we need to do is target criminals. Now, our biggest problem is recidivism. One guy has 46 separate firearm convictions. 46. Another guy's got 9 separate convictions for threatening police with a firearm. Another guy's got 9 separate convictions for being caught with an illegal firearm. It's almost 10% of every gang member has 5 or more gun convictions. Think about that. Not a gun conviction, 5 or more. It's quite extraordinary. Oh, and shooters are absolutely ropeable at the moment, because while all this is happening, while we're having our sports ripped from us and we're not being compensated fairly, while we're being threatened by the police minister with years in prison if we don't comply, while this is happening, the other day some guy punched his partner, chased her down with a car, tried to kill her with a car. He's caught with an illegal firearm, a handgun, one of our most restricted firearms, and it was stolen, home detention. Another guy's been caught with an AK-47 that had no stock on it, but a loaded magazine. In other words, you can't put it in your shoulder and aim it. All you can do is drive past another gang house and shoot it up. Home detention. I'll leave you with this one. Our worst ever gun theft. This is a guy who targeted an armorer for a pistol club. He targeted this guy and then sold the guns to gangs. Again, put them in criminal hands, where they'd be used as terror weapons. This guy, when he perpetrated that offense, he was serving a non-custodial sentence for his last gun offense after a history of gun offending. And you know what just made the news? They've just given him parole again. Captain's in the court. Middle of all this, while we're tearing our hair out, that happened. We just couldn't believe it.
Yep. So I mean, this is what we're saying in our draft firearm policy, is that there's a theme here. The government goes and punishes the meek and the law-abiding because it's easy. Take their guns off them, you know, be seen to do something. Then you've got real criminals who actually are hard to deal with. I mean, if you've got someone that's committing multiple crimes, you know, you can lock them up, but you can only lock them up for so long, and then you've got to do something with them. Unless, of course, you have a policy called three strikes, you can put them away for a lot longer. But you know, the people that are causing the real trouble are not being punished, and that's what we've got to actually deal with here.
Here's the problem, right? We've talked about, so people talk about getting guns off the streets. We can't do that anymore. All right, 10% of all guns confiscated from criminals in Australia are homemade. Now, when I say homemade, that can be a little zip gun someone's made. Or that can be a gun factory producing submachine guns. Now, in Australia,
same problem
in
here.
Canada, in the UK, they have found production lines pumping out submachine guns. So we know that criminals will steal guns. We know that they will modify things into guns. We know that they'll make guns. There's been a machine gun murder in New Zealand by a gun that was homemade. It was a homemade machine gun. So it's happened here. And that was before 3D printing. And that was before these little desktop milling machines. You can actually, you know, watch a gun being made on your desktop while you have a cup of tea. So criminals will always have access to firearms. We need to know that. If you can import drugs by the tons, you will bring in a handgun.
Yeah.
Criminals will always have access to firearms. Whether or not they use them is up to us, and we can send a message to them. Criminals are always going to be criminals because, you know, work sucks and it's easier to steal stuff. But you can send a message that you don't use guns because it's just not worth it. Yeah. And what I want to do, you've got to remember, firearm crime is not accidental. It's not a hungry kid stealing an apple.
Yeah.
You know, this is top tier offending. So what I'd like to see is a mandatory 5 years for anyone who steals a firearm.
Yep. Yeah.
I'd like to see something called an aggravating factor. So basically what happens is any time someone uses a firearm in a crime, that becomes an automated aggravating factor at time of sentencing. So in other words, if they would have got months before, now they get years.
Yep.
They get the top end of the scale because they used the gun. That's not even a new law. That just involves tweaking the existing law. So it's very, very easy to do, and I think it would have a big effect.
Yep, so you take the law you've got and bolt on top an additional aggravating factor. So it's an aggravating factor to do a crime motivated by hate, for instance. Whether you agree with that or not is another issue.
Yep.
It should be an aggravating factor under Section 9 of the Sentencing Act. If you have a firearm, then you get more.
Okay.
You basically just made a policy for us, because I don't see any problem with that.
Incorporating
that. I have to stress here, we're not talking about poachers. We're not talking about people who let their gun license lapse. Not that I condone that at all, I don't. But what I'm saying is this is the worst of the worst terror offending.
Sure,
yeah.
Mike, thank you.
The people who shoot, it's through to the cops.
We're running out of time, as enjoyable as it is talking to you, Mike and David. Any last words from you, David, before we
want to thank Mike. Look, I mean, you have been often pilloried and attacked, as a lot of people have, standing up for common sense positions in the last few months, but you've always been really respectful in the way you've debated. You've always been really, really informed with a lot of evidence. You actually bring information to the debate, and so I just want to thank you for what you've done in the public debate, even though it's been pretty hard slog for the last few months, and for coming on Politics in Full Sentence today, because that's what our show is about.
My favorite was the Herald. I'll leave you with this. They attacked me, and I said, "That's absolutely outrageous. I will sue you." And then we've looked at it. You're quite right. So they moved it from news to opinion. Everything's fine then. But yeah, it was a pleasure to meet you guys. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, thank you everyone for tuning in to Politics in Full Sentence. We'll see you next week.